Hello, and welcome to Darker Corners, the best and only Justice League Dark show. This is episode 7.5. I'm the host, Nick Antoine. Valerie, Bertinelli, and Harper, my knapsack is not on my back. It's non-existent, where it belongs, because I'm 30. As such, one day at a time, Rhoda. The key to happiness, it's sea. Not yes or the ocean, but the sea. Old business. Those used to be shorter. New business. Things change. This is issue 7 of Swamp Thing. I'll wait on the title as per usual till the end. It was written by Scott Snyder. It was penciled and inked by Yannick Paquette. The colors were done by Nathan Fairbairn. Travis Lanham was the letterer. The associate editor was Chris Conroy. And the main editor was Matt Idelson. The cover itself was Given Life by Yannick Paquette and Nathan Fairbairn. Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson created Swamp Thing from nothingness and gave him to the world because no one else dared. As per usual, we start off on the cover itself, which, as it always is with Yannick Paquette's work, in conjunction with Nathan Fairbairn, is a very liquid quality to it. I have no idea what type of the color medium that was used. You know, whether it's more oil based or water based, because I don't know what kind of paper they ended up coloring on and inking on. There's something about it that's so visceral. Something about this artwork. It makes you fall into it, even though you know wholeheartedly it's not real. It's just an image. So much so that it's one of the rare, types of graphic novels that I'll actually go out of my way to get alternate covers. And one of them is without... Yeah, see, it's just... That's the iPad. What are you going to do? One of them is without the colors themselves, and it seems as if the colors are what the title entails. They're not drawn by the penciler and the inker. So what looks like Swamp Thing with hands raised to the heavens, to the skies themselves, when you look at the uncolored page, where it's just inks and pencils, and you can only see the inks, but you know what I'm saying here, it looks like he's looking up in reverence at this weird being. It looks like these two eyes. Again, it's probably just the human mind playing tricks on itself, projecting what it wants to see to make sense of the world. But it seems like there are these squinting eyes looking down with this exposed flora-esque brain. It's real weird, creepy, like all the rest of the covers, just eliciting this vibe of, yeah, we like pulp comics. We like gruesome horror graphic novels. As we start off from exactly where issue 6 left off, Alec Holland has found himself in a bit of a dilemma, and he has decided, being chased by the Cretans that were following him at the end of, if I'm not mistaken, they started their following at the end of issue 1 and really started to catch up in issue 2. Creepy, creepy, creepy ass people. I still feel like if something like this was shown, it would creep people the hell out to the point that they would start writing in, like, what the hell are you putting on television? I'm saying that because if Alec Holland starts making appearances on the Constantine show, it would be the coolest thing in the world to have the Rot be the threat for Constantine and Swamp Thing to kind of step in and, pull the deus ex machina and save the day, whilst Constantine is on a road trip or something, like a 2-episode arc, showing that he's really just utterly powerless and there aren't any tricks he can do to subdue the Swamp Thing. He just kind of has to let it be what it is, a force of nature. On the flip side of that, he is not the force of nature, Alec Holland, at the moment, and he is at the mercy of these beings, these odd fellows that have decided to overtake this resting place that Mr. Holland has retreated to. And as he starts to succumb to death, falling deeper and deeper into the abyss of the unknown, he comes face to face with the Parliament of Trees. Now, I've spoken about the Parliament of Trees in a previous episode, so I won't go too in-depth, won't be too descriptive about them. Just needless to say, they're a very powerful group of people. They are, in essence, the stewards of the Avatar of the Green. Whoever ends up taking up the mantle, as we mentioned in a previous episode, that there have been different Swamp Things throughout history, according to the New 52, which is genius. So it allows all the rest of everything to still exist, just like all the rest of the graphic novels do. People wake up, pay attention, it's all there, man. It's all there. Just reread stuff. Reread Flashpoint. Trust me. These entities kind of watch over the current Avatar and make sure that the current Avatar is doing their bidding. And that's something that I had no idea was a fact in this series, in the graphic novel run of Swamp Thing, that he was not doing things of his own volition, or at the very least he wasn't at the behest of his own ideas, but that he had to answer to a higher authority. Granted, whether he chooses to actually do what they want or not is up to, you know, the writers or the purpose of the story, but to be, as a reader, to bear witness to these ancient tree beings being decimated and still lording over Alec Holland, the fact that he refused to take up the mantle and do what they had asked of him, that now they are going to force him to go through tremendous agony, again, along those lines. It's creepy, it's macabre, you know, to forcefully torture the hero that the reader is supposed to be, you know, feeling for, is such a visceral experience. Again, you're putting that up against all of these bizarre images, which it's beautiful how you're led into it. It starts off with just the separation of the panels in a slightly uniform way. They're not completely perfect parallelograms. They're, you know, rhombi and borderline trapezoids, but it then starkly, once the drama shifts, goes into this flower-laden liquid, almost antifreeze, but the colors and tinges of green type barrier that separates the moments of change within each scene. And you see the dismay on the Parliament of Trees, their faces, as well as the unknowing of Alec Holland as to why any of this is going on in the first place. If he is in fact talking to a group of deities, why they are in a state of helplessness. The way that everything is portrayed ends up, when it comes to especially, you know, of course, not only what's going on in the panels, but in between the panels, in between the dialogue and the action, you know, when Alec Holland is addressing his superiors, to be engulfed with almost an acid trip's worth of green swirliness, and in the real world for it to seemingly be rotting at the seams, to have leaves that seem to be pulsating with crimson blood as opposed to chlorophytic. There was an ellipsis after that word, not a pause. I will point out, though, that I think something is done with the artwork that I know is not a mistake. Obviously, it's drawn. It was formulated and then put into practice. But it shows how comfortable people should be with nudity, given that, for instance, Swamp Thing is naked. You know, he's like an animal. He's not wearing any pants. You know, he might have foliage hanging over. Yeah. He might have foliage hanging over his genitalia, but they still exist, as far as I know. It might not serve the function that's normally expected. There was a story way back when, pre-Flashpoint. I know there's been quite a few, but there was definitely one where he wanted to share a sexual experience, not to procreate, but to share the ecstasy that is the climax with another individual. And they had used a, if I'm not mistaken, it was a tuber, so basically a potato. But when you think potato, you think something starchy and flavorless. So think more of like a yam, like a cooked sweet potato, a yam. But that you bite into it and it's like a peach, like a succulent peach or the juiciest pear you've ever eaten, where, you know, the juice is just running down your lips and you just want to eat the whole thing. But then as you're eating it, you end up going into this other world of pure ecstasy that's a blend between the sex scene landscape in Lawnmower Man and, I don't know, the sex scene between Huxley and Sylvester Stallone's character in Demolition Man. I should have just said, and I forgot her name. Miss Congeniality. Sandra Bullock. I just forgot the cop's name. I don't know how. He's a Demolition Man. Even though he doesn't necessarily use typical male genitalia on a day-to-day basis, I'm sure it still exists. Nevertheless, you're made to kind of not pay attention to that by the shadow work and the panel work. But the individual, Alec Holland, is still very naked. And if he was all green and fuzzy with foliage, I don't think anyone, you know, myself and any reader, would have any kind, you know, be taking any umbrage to that fact. But because he's just a naked human being, I'm sure there were some people that were just like, hey, wait a minute, he's naked. It doesn't really matter. I'm an advocate for being naked. I can't speak for it in public, just because of the simple fact that children exist. You shouldn't have adults, male or female, walking around in public naked with kids walking around. Like, they need a barrier before emotions start kicking in, before chemicals and hormones start kicking in because of puberty. They need to believe that the world is innocent. I remember how that was. It was awesome. Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and hopes and dreams and wishes were still attainable. Still very, very real. You can't have actual reality seep in, like, oh my God, look at that man or woman's gut. Or, oh my God, look at that man or woman's veins bulging out of their thighs and it's creeping up their kneecap. Oh my God, I don't want to look up any further. You know, like, they don't need all that stuff. But in the same token, clothing is so goddamn restrictive. I won't talk anymore about that because I don't want to creep people out as to what my state of dress or undress may or may not be. Suffice it to say, where I live, won't give it away too much. Let's just say it's on the other side of the Atlantic. I am black. I tend to blend in because most of the people in the country are black as well. And it's an effing desert, so it gets quite hot. So you decide whether it would be prudent to wear multiple layers or have a fan blowing on you and a nice, cold, tall glass of water. I'd like to point out the innards of a wonton type look of this cocoon that's carrying the, I swear to you, this is the last time, the masked rider that I've been riding with Alec Holland. It's just because it's so pertinent. If you're jumping in just now, you really shouldn't have this revealed to you. I want to wait until there's a nice proper climax to say, yes, this is who we're talking about, and these are all these individuals. But if you've been riding up to this point in this journey, you've been riding in the podcast, I figure, you know, keep it intriguing, keep it somewhat mysterious. Nevertheless, the masked rider calls out Alec. Two separate syllables, two separate word balloons. In this is a beautifully rendered on the dual splash page 8-9, if I'm not mistaken. There's no numbers on the pages, showing this individual being covered in, again, leaves that seem to be filled with now this magenta hue, as opposed to anything azure. The vessel she's being carried in, you know, in the previous issue, it looked like some kind of spider type creature in silhouette, and now it looks very much like somebody just ripped open a fried wonton and just left that odd shaped looking testicle thing on the ground, and all these people are pushing it, 20 people. It is creepy as hell. There's all this crap going on, just eerie stuff in the background and the foreground, and it's all a part of this individual's kingdom. And it's all juxtaposed to this brightly lit cavalcade of death occurring around Alec Holland's nude body and the Parliament of Trees, as the Parliament continues to assert that, oh no, it's too late, you're just going to die, but we want you to die with us so that you don't die a better death than we have to face. And Alec's saying, you know, you're not quite getting why I have a problem with you, and him going into detail with it, and you see the obstinance on the faces of these this Parliament that changes into, you know, last week's theme, reluctant acceptance. Seeing, okay, there clearly had to have been a reason why we picked this individual. It may not have been the choices that he makes instantaneously. It might just be the ones that he will come to make. And this would be one of them. His intellect, his genius being the thing that would end up helping them more than they could ever help him. Callbacks to beings and objects and things from not only issues past, episodes past, but pre-Flashpoint, as well as these odd, creepy minions going out of their way to attack Holland, and again pointing out, whereas the Masked Rider was carried away in a webbed ribcage of sorts that was rust-colored, you have this almost human-sized cabbage that's encircling Alec Holland, that these cretins are trying desperately to rip through so that they can stab him to death multiple times, which evoked for me, I just always feel like they never show that enough. Like, not enough, but it just seems like such a creepy thing to see. And I've seen it three times now, at the very least. And I'm just shocked that one of them was twice in the same series, if you will. One of them was, it's not Road Trip, that was the Tom Green movie, which is a great movie, it's totally different, it's a comedy. There was this movie where, and I know people are screaming at their iPhones or iPads or whatever your device is, where a bunch of kids, they were going to see a meteor, like a crater, in Australia, and they went out there, it was all cool, and their car broke down, and they called, the Australian version of AAA to come and get them, and the dude came and got them, you know, hitched up the car, and drove them, 100 miles out of the way to their place, and then systematically killed them all. But there's this one scene where the dude, he goes up to the person with a knife, and sticks the knife in between, in their back, but in between two of the, you know, like, you have bones in your spine, if you ever eaten neck bone. I'm really going there with references, which is delicious. But basically, you know, your spine is a bunch of sections, like it's a bunch of pieces. Why can't I think of the word? It's vertebrae, right? Third vertebrae? Yeah, vertebrae. Like those pieces that are in your spine. He sticks it in between two of them and twists the knife, so that their spine pops, and then they become a paraplegic. It's the weirdest thing in the world, but he does it slowly, and it's like as if it's like a sexual thing, which I'm trying not to make it seem like it's telling of me. It really isn't. I'm not a violent sexual being. I enjoy vigorous, fearsome sex, but that's not what sex is for. That's for that outlet of emotion when it's time for something like that. Sex is a loving thing that you have between you and your loved one. You know, I'm not trying to scare the woman off. It's like, this guy's just trying to fuck straight through me. No. But seeing this method of stabbing on screen always seems like it's going a little too far, but the fact that they're willing to go that far always takes me aback. The other two instances were, funnily enough, in Torchwood. The first one being, what was the name of the episode? Captain Jack Harkness? Was it? No. It was the last episode of season one. I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of that episode. End of Days? Oh, wow, I got it. And not the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie with Kevin Pollak. and CCH Pounder, another great movie. I just, oh man, great movies out there. Check that one out again. Even if you're like, oh, I hated that movie, go watch it again. That movie was kind of awesome, bizarre, kind of awesome. And it's Arnold Schwarzenegger, man. Come on, son. But no, the end of today's episode, there's this guy, Billis Manger. He ends up going up to a character and stabbing them, but then like pulling out the knife and then slowly putting the knife back in. It is really creepy, man. Like, you don't see stuff like that. I would name Suspiria, but that's kind of cliche. And it's quick. And then the other episode was in the second season, Sleeper, where one of the sleeper agents, let's just say, you know, I'm always trying not to spoil stuff, ends up stabbing an individual. But they say it later, how many times it was, but you see it, he stabs him like 7 times. Like, it's creepy, it's off screen, but you see the individual like stabbing someone. And it's like, you don't see that, like, that's too over the top. I put it in the same vein of, which is what I want to do, I kind of want to do this as the next film, but I might not go this gritty with the next film, but I don't want to give too much away, but I want to have a scene, and this is a vocal copyright, I'm coining that phrase, Nick Antoine 2014, to have this scene where there's a conversation between these two individuals, and then there's somebody in the background, like, you see people in the background, they're not doing anything to draw attention to themselves, they're just like eating dinner, you know, whatever, eating lunch, they just wanted to be in a diner, love diner scenes. And then one of them just gets up, walks up to the person that's being talked to, that the audience is looking at, and just shoots them point blank in the head. And just as, like, the explosion happens, you cut to the title sequence, or you cut to, you know, another scene. I think something like that is just as visceral as, like, a slow, up-close stabbing. It's just one of those things you don't see that often, and it's normally cut away from, because it's just, it's so visceral, it hits you simultaneously in the back of the throat, inside your mouth, as well as in the pit of your stomach. You want to both vomit and drink as many liquids as possible because you feel like you're entirely too full of emotions and dehydrated. It's disgusting. Those are the images, those are the emotions that were vivified within me as I looked at this one particular page, page 12 precisely. When Alec Holland is being pursued, it's all this constant stabbing, and there's a couple other images where it's like, oh no, they're stabbing, like, they're trying to actively kill this guy, but not the way you would expect, like, oh, you stab the person, or you just shoot them once, and it's over. It's like, no, just keep stabbing, you never know, it'll work. It's just, it's gruesome, it goes there, and again, that's proper storytelling, where you can have all the words telling you, like, this is what's going on, this is how we feel about something, this is how we don't feel about something, where, you know, emotionless, or we're filled with emotions, and to have all of this chaos and simultaneous order occurring with all the beautiful colors, the resplendent images. And so, Alec Holland, seeing destiny for what it is, in his control and out of it, we also see the new avatar, the Rot, begin to emerge. And as they do, we finally start to get the reveal. As it's, you know, we're led to believe from the cover, so I'm not spoiling anything. We are given the reveal of Swamp Thing. Now, page 16. My word. The transformation. I won't spoil everything going into everything, but I do just want to talk about one of the images, which is the rib cage. Tendrils going over the rib cage. I've always had this weird feeling that would just be so weird, like, if you could actually feel the inside of your body. Not like Inside Out Boy from those Penny cartoons on Pee Wee's Playhouse, but more just like, what was a good example? Hellraiser 2, Hellbound, where the female Cenobite came out with no skin, she was just flesh. And then she acquired flesh, but then the way she was able to acquire it, you know, every single time she had to dig her fingers into the person's, like, neck. And it's this weird thing, like, you never see stuff like that. Like, I saw it there, and Man on the Moon, the Jim Carrey film, where they were doing the thing, like, the body healing. Oh, there was another movie. Wow, oh my goodness, I think it happened in Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls. It did. it had the same kind of thing where it was like a shaman, a natural healer that was digging their hand into someone's body to take an affliction out. It happened in When Nature Calls. What was the reasoning for that? Something happened. I remember it was like a borderline montage scene, and someone removed something, and then he had to remove something as well. And it was like kind of a joke. And I think Tommy Davidson was in the scene too, if I'm not mistaken. No, Tommy Davidson no dialogue. I was gonna say like another word, like dialogue less. That's not a real word. He had no dialogue. He was a warrior. But yeah, Jim Carrey's character had a scene where he did that in that movie, and then as well, Man in the Moon, where his character. I'm thinking of latke, because I'm thinking of potato latkes, because I'm kind of hungry. Why can't I remember his name? Wow, that's really sad. Andy Kaufman. I knew that was because I love his stuff. He's a genius. Where he had cancer in real life, but in the film they were showing that one of the things he had done was to go to a natural healer, and that they were going to be taking out the cancer, you know, digging their hand straight in their body, but you would feel no pain. And they were kind of being shown not to be a hoax, but just, well, yeah, just fleecing people. I always felt like that's so visceral. It's so David Cronenberg to show hands going into a body. You never see that. I think that's people's fascination with fisting for some reason. Like, I don't think it's so much sexual as it is an oddity that ends up bleeding into the realm of dopamine release. But, like, go check out Videodrome. That's just a weird flick. But to be able to, like, move your, like, okay, you got a headache. It would be amazing if you could kind of pull a Martian Manhunter or if you like the other house, Kitty Pryde, and just put your fingers through your skull and just massage your brain. Like, not squeeze it because you wouldn't be stupid. Like, you wouldn't be trying to kill yourself. Which I guess that would be the crazy. Oh, let's go there in a second. But to just massage it, like, oh, that kind of hurts. Or, you know, not because you want to, like, put foreign objects in there. Like, maybe you could never do that. You could only, like, force your hand in. You couldn't, like, I guess you could always force in, like, a screwdriver or something if you're effing crazy. But, you know, you want to massage it. Or if you, in this case, like I was talking about, your chest hurts for whatever reason, and you want to massage your lungs or your heart. That's what they do when there's different types of palpitations in surgery. There will be a situation. There are situations where, like, oh, we have to massage their heart. If you could do that, like, you know, go wash your hands and then just slowly massage your heart, like, feel it. I think we would have such a connection to our own bodies. It seems like an overkill to have to go through to understand that we are also very human and frail and fragile. But it would be such an amazing journey to go down if you'll do something like that. Especially, like I said, with this particular image, with this rib cage, is showing these green vines, these tendrils just kind of going in and out of this rib cage and above the diaphragm, and it just seems like it would be the most unpleasant feeling amongst everything else that's going on in the page. That particular one feels like, okay, you'd have no control over that. You know, it's just a bit much. The thought process that I cut off was the idea of what suicide would look like if you were able to do what I was just talking about, like put your hand through your skin and massage muscle. And if you, you know, worked at it, you could phase through, you know, the bone. So it would be pointless to do it anywhere else in your body, like phasing through bone, except for your rib cage and your skull. Because everywhere else it would be like, oh, what are you going to do there? And, you know, people, it would just be the craziest thing, like suicides with people, and it would be like, I guess it'd be called like the thinking. I guess it'd be called the thinking, where if somebody ends up going into the thinking, they were stressing out too much, or they just couldn't take anymore, and they put their hand, like, you know, face palming, put their hand, their palm straight through their forehead, and then just squeeze their brain until, you know, it's a mushed grape in their palm. Damn, in their hand. That's a better sentence. But their wrist would be the only thing seeing. Like, it would be their wrist and their forearm, and it would just be the weirdest thing to see. Like, you would see this person, like, sitting down or laid out on the floor with their hand inside their head, but no blood. Oh man, that's such a weird thing. I can officially say I don't think I've ever seen that. And that would just copyright that. Vocal copyright 2014. It would just be fascinating. Like, if for whatever reason there was just this rash of suicides where people literally squeeze their own brains or they squeeze their own heart because they were in so much pain because of, you know, they were lovelorn isn't it? Oh man, that would be such an odd, tragic thing to see. You know, you always see people, you know, like Kalima in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, or various episodes of True Blood, where an individual thrust their, or Hellraiser Hellbound, she did it there too, where someone will thrust their hand into someone's chest and rip out their heart. You know, I'm sorry, not Hellraiser Bound, not Hellraiser 2. They didn't do that in Hellraiser 2. That was just the neck thing. That was Hellraiser 4. And if I'm not mistaken, that was, again, is another callback to another episode. It was Adam Scott getting his heart ripped out. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, but I don't know why I can't remember the actress's name. I feel like I've seen her in something else, too. Very, very French. Yeah, so what's the button on that one? It would be creepy if you could probe your own organs. Yeah, there you go. We have the appearance of the beast, the monster, the threat to the rot. And it is clearly shown to be a threat. And we see a display of powers that, again, no spoiling, but I just want to say for anyone that's looking at this, the bottom of the page, on page 20, you know, the dude and the eye socket. I mean, come on, son. That doesn't even explain anything. You'd be like, oh, maybe, no, you don't know. You don't know. And then how everything just kind of culminates, it's everything I've wanted, everything I need. Oh, my word, Swamp Thing, you're so beautiful to me. Yeah, that's a bad song. Okay. I won't take it back, though. Because this series is so full of intent. It's so full of earnestness. It wants you to be in this world. It doesn't want you to think about anything else, to believe that the life that you're living is real or worth paying attention to 24/7. This is one of those, you know, I say all of them, but I can't speak for all of them because I haven't read them all, but every single graphic novel series I've come across in DC Comics for the New 52 has had the effect of, you know, be here with us, and especially if it's an arc, if you can, you know, hold off and then buy, you know, or you know, buy all these different issues but hold off reading them. I always find that the most fascinating thing, to hold off and then read them, and then, you know, read like a complete, not a complete run, but like a complete arc, just to get the entire gist of what all the artists were trying to convey. It's like this continual story. It's so beautiful. It's like binge watching television, where, you know, or binge watching movies, or like with movies. Like I've done that, even with Los Bandoleros, watching all the Fast and Furious movies, seeing how the stories connect. Just awesome stuff. Like, it's really cool. Like, it's popcorn movies. Like, I'm not going in to watch an art house film. I'm going in to be entertained. It's amazing that line from Gladiator rings true to this day. What are you going to the movies for? To be Siskel and Ebert? One of them's dead and the other one is them. So stop trying to assimilate. You know, give your opinions. Of course, there's nothing wrong with that. But to judge as if you could do better, that clearly... places you in the category of rabble rouser or peanut gallery. And both of those individuals, you know, are just the audience. There's nothing wrong with being the audience. I'm the audience quite often. I love being a consumer. But you can't hate on producers for just trying to entertain you. You know, trying to give you something different. Even if you think, oh, yeah, that's the same. There's a good chance that if it got to the point that it got to, you're noticing the similar stuff because you're supposed to notice it. All the stuff that you're not noticing are the subtle things that you're just like, oh, I didn't catch that, or I didn't catch that, you know. It's just, it's worth rethinking. There's a reason why things are playing out the way that they're playing out on screen, or in this case, on the page. You're made to disappear. You're made to fall into this world, and Scott Snyder and Yannick Paquette do a great job of doing so. If I'm not mistaken, the creative team does switch over to Charles Soule as the writer, and Yannick Paquette stays as the artist. but I could be wrong. I just feel like I remember seeing Charles Soule, S-O-U-L-E, on the cover of a couple issues, but it's not anywhere in the beginning. I believe like all these arcs continue and you know, ends off. But anyway, that was this issue. From what I can tell, the theme seems to be recognition. You know, recognizing that, let's not use the same word in the sentence for definition. Coming to terms with various things, whether it's the avatars eventually realizing that they have to become the avatars that they're destined to be. In this case, Alec Holland recognizing, okay, everything that I've done, that reluctant acceptance that he went through in the previous issue, going a little bit beyond the reluctance in the acceptance part of those stages that everyone knows about. But in this case, recognizing how much better off he would be with this power, with this new lifestyle that he's supposed to be living. The recognition of the Parliament of the Trees that causing him undue pain is not going to help him, Alec Holland, a step closer to the green. Recognizing that the choices that they made initially were the right ones, and that apparently they usually are, that second-guessing themselves is pointless because that's not their place. Their place is to pass judgment and then have the judgment either enacted or not, but then just move on to the next thought process. And the recognition of the rot, that they can chase Alec Holland all they want, but Swamp Thing is a formidable foe. I will say, this is a slightly shorter issue, but, or episode. It's not a shorter issue. It's a shorter episode, mostly because it's that dead man, that Boston Brand-esque tightrope walk that must be walked. Wanna, with this podcast, stay more Boston Brand than becoming dead man. I feel like it would be very easy to get shot by critics, by the creators and artists, if all manner of story and artwork are spoiled in a podcast. You know, like, what's the point? What would be the point of a podcast? But to, you know, talk about the cool stuff that's going on is the whole point. It's the modus operandi. There are things that are going on that if they're spoken of in detail, it would destroy the experience of reading it. But if there was anything that was worth pointing out, or anything that should have been pointed out, that seemed like it was a hidden agenda, you know, like there's, for instance, there's an image on one of the back pages, if I'm not mistaken, it's page 16, I could go back, where it seems like amongst the Parliament of the Trees, there's this one that looks like they're covered in robes, and they're wearing a hood. This is page 10. Amidst everything, in the middle of the page, right? Yeah, roughly in the middle of the page. Like if you go up and to the right just a little bit from Alec Holland's face, it seems like there's somebody like a Lady in the Lake type visage on a tree, and as if the individual is holding a sword. That person isn't saying anything. They don't do anything. They're just an onlooker. They're not amidst the destruction per se. And yet, it's an image that was drawn. It's something that was put there that it could be like when people see the face of Jesus in toast. That I'm just looking for something. But I didn't scrape off the carbon to make the image. That was Yannick Paquette and Nathan Fairbairn, in this case, digitally speaking. So it's there for a reason. It may not be a reason, oh, this is going to come back later on, oh my god, it's going to be huge, but it's definitely something worth pointing out. Like, hey, did you notice that thing? That's different. And it's pointing things out that are in celebration. You know, I haven't really seen it per se, but even if I did, I wouldn't. The point of this podcast, I'm not going to go around pointing out like, oh, look at this typographical error, or oh, look, should this color have been this color? Other people do that. Other people like to do that. Other people hate it when it's done. It's not what I'm here for. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what this podcast is for. It's reverence. It's saying, hey, man, this was awesome. Hey, lady, this was awesome. Woman just sounds weird. Just like man, even. Woman and man, it sounds so general. Ladies and gentlemen, I love that. It's so formal and perfect at the same time. It's, ladies and gentlemen, it's the ultimate of casting aspersions by the carnival barker. You're saying, oh, you're this, you know, beautiful, primped individual, regardless of what colors you're wearing or how many layers you're wearing makeup. Did your hair up all nice. You smell of woman, regardless of who you enjoy laying with. You are a lady. Gentlemen, you are adorned in your three-piece suit or five-piece suit. I think there's even seven-piece, but let's not go there because I don't know. You've got your hair coiffed the way your hair is coiffed, depending on your race and what your hair follicles will allow you to do, or the treatment of your hair, regardless of race. Your shoes are all shiny. You are a gentleman, even though in both those cases, those aren't who you actually are. You're just getting all dolled up to try and become some representation of what you feel acceptable society should be. I think it's a fascinating way to designate the genders. It's not reducing them, it's elevating them to a point. Not saying that everyone should be at that point, but if you get to that point, it's showing the respect. And I feel like calling someone just a woman or calling someone just a man is somewhat disrespectful. It's like calling someone a boy or a girl. It's like, oh, you're just this thing. It's like, oh, no, she's a lady. Whoa, 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 she's a lady. She went through all that drama, and she looks like that. Or, that's a gentleman. That's why it's GQ. It's like, you went out of your way to groom yourself to look that version of presentable. You know, it takes work and effort. You know, I'm sure, you know, What works for the general public? Sofia Vergara or John Hamm? Each of those individuals, I'm sure, spends, I don't want to say equal, but rationally speaking, and I mean by ratio, not being rational about something, they spend an equal amount of time making sure that they look the way that people expect them to look. They, I'm sure, look differently when they're at home and relaxing. But when you come outside and it's like, oh, we got to go to work, you know, or, oh, we're going to the special function, you know, and it's something that everybody does. They go to work and they go to a special function every now and again. You put on this mask like, oh, this is the person I want you to see. That's the lady. That's the gentleman, you know. To say that either one of those genders should not go through that effort just to put up a facade, it's a bit sexist in either part. Now, you could say that you don't want to do it. That's totally different. Like, hey, yeah, I don't want to do it. Like, I'd rather dress in sweatpants all the time. You know, me personally, I don't really go through that much drama. I drink a lot of water and exercise, but that's just to try and keep my skin clean. But I don't wear makeup. I don't, like, subscribe to, like, oh, this is a particular hairstyle that's worth rocking right about now. You know, I shave when I want to. I mean, it takes me forever to grow facial hair, so that kind of helps. But I don't rock a beard. In the same token, I'm not super clean shaven all the time. You know, like, I'm not really paying attention to societal norms. But in the same token, if I'm going to a special function, or if I'm doing something that's related to work, you know, like a business meeting, like something happening, I'm going to go shoot something, you know, or I'm meeting up with a business partner, whatever the case may be. Yeah, I'm going to look slightly different. Like, I want to be presentable. And that's the case where I'm like, oh, now I'm a gentleman. When I'm at home, just cold chilling, eating some ice cream, watching Blade or Judge Dredd, you know, I mean the old one, the new one was cool, but I mean the old one, Demolition Man, Passenger 57, I'm cold chilling, I'm just some guy, just a man, you know, that's when it's okay. Man, I'm always going into this political commentary, and it's so silly, because I'm not trying to ruffle any of you guys' feathers, I'm giving an opinion about how I feel about myself, and how I should present myself to the world. And in the same token, why people should not force themselves on other people or force their ideals on other people. And I think it's equidistant hatred to be racist or be sexist or be gender specific, you know, gender bias rather, than say like, oh, anyone that's a part of the LGBT community is someone that should be shunned. that's equally as bad as somebody that's in those camps that says, oh, those individuals should no longer exist, or they should have no say. They should be allowed to speak, but then as well, you should be allowed to speak. That way, each of you can see each other's side of the story and try and come to terms, like, okay, when we're in public, how are we going to interact? No one cares what happens behind closed doors. However you get to nirvana is how you get to nirvana. But when it comes to us working together to make sure society keeps working, like the cops are still doing their thing, the firemen are still doing their thing, the hospitals still very much are willing to take you in and treat you, we have to figure out ways to try and treat each other better, not tear each other down because it makes us feel uncomfortable. That's a lot of stress that's undue and unnecessary. And in the end, unimportant. It's not what life's about. It's supposed to be about loving each other. It's not that hard. Actually, it really is. Hate is so easy. Love is very, 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 very hard. You know, I was going to continue with that, but I'm not going to continue with that. This episode is titled, as well as the issue, Swamp Thing, which is great. Beautiful. Swamp Thing. The email address for the show is darkercornerscast@gmail.com. Is it going to change? Never. It's darkercornerscast@gmail.com. You know, just to add a little behind the scenes, some of the things I write down, most of it I don't. When it comes to the stingers, chances are I write them down just so it's, I know it already, but it's like, don't mess it up. I actually write out dot. I don't put a period. That's because apparently I'm a black Ron Burgundy. I'm a black Burgundy. You can follow the show on Twitter at Darker Corners. It's with a capital D or a capital C. Sorry, capital D and a capital C. See, I'm telling you, man, this is not pre-recorded. Darker Corners. You can go rate the show on iTunes. You know, because you're cool. Because you are the tops. You are the bee's knees. Why are the bee's knees awesome? Because they swivel around in circles like a Harrier jet to keep them stable. And I don't know. But just go ahead and give this show 5 stars and say something. And say anything. Or as Metallica would say, say yes. At least say hello. I don't know why you would say yes. Yeah, just write yes in a period or yes in an exclamation point. Go ahead and check out Bennett and the Queen. That's the iVampire podcast. Only 19 episodes. It's not done yet, of course. It's going to be going. Should be every week. I don't know if I've decided like I'm going to do it every week and then just start rushing it out and give you guys one a day, but that's crazy talk. You stretch that bad boy out. And then you could also listen to Constant Tone, which is the Hellblazer podcast. That's definitely more vulgar, definitely more about the occult and drug use and sexuality, and emotions, and cigarettes, and trench coats, incantations, and did I say drugs? Yeah, I said drugs. This has been episode 7.5. I have been Nick Antoine. You have been the unwitting listener. Thank you for listening. Step into the dark.